all starts with an unsolicited visit from our old publisher, and it ends in a laboured, reckless helicopter pursuit above the North Reservoir, above everything. We don't know how we got our number or our location. We are, after all, visiting a friend who is in turn visiting a friend of a friend. The first friend, an artist, a painter of miniatures in tempera and of modest stature herself, no taller than the average Canadian goose with a yolky complexion, is visiting her lanky and impish muse of indiscernible years. Below the moustache, he looks no older than 15, with quivering pink lips and a gleaming, dimpled chin. Above the moustache, however, his haphazardly corrugated face tells a different story. Eyes swallowed by dark ridges betraying a litany of unproductive disenchantments. But below those stiff bristles of facial upholstery, his pursed lips bubble with a honeyed Neapolitan accent as his spindly limbs flitter about. He looks like a cross between an unfired Giacometti sculpture and a Satsuma, and he keeps offering to demonstrate how they embrace, he and our friend. She semi-dismissively brushing away his affections with a showy giggle that ricochets through the empty corridors of the Wellness Integration Centre. The perpetually unfinished venture the Satsuma had inherited when the entire family was wiped out in an airborne Red Arrows blunder. We're sleeping in the level 2 gym, curled up on a pile of haphazardly scattered yoga mats by the side of the unfilled lap pool, when the honking starts. There's something in the staccato jabbing of that horn that makes it instantly recognisable as that of our old boss, Kendrith Pate, nay Pate, former head of strategic technical publisher K3P. It was always unclear whether this appellation signified 3 Ks and 1 P in the founder's initials, or 1 K and 3 Ps. Nor whether the initials P or K referred to the first name, the surname, or feasibly in the case of Pate nay Pate, both. The honking continues, entirely devoid of relent, until we are forced to leave the studio complex to go out and see what the hell he wants. We grab some trousers draped over the edge of a plastic sun lounger and stumble our way into them on the way out, realizing a little too late that they aren't ours at all. They're far too large, comically so, like a pair of circus trousers tailored for two, the waistline wide enough to accommodate at least one other clown. We shuffle through the shared corridors, struggling to hold them aloft, and after a while find our way outside to the car park. Pate nay Pate had to change his name twice by deed poll to remove its accented characters, so it could be more easily inserted into the linguistically assumptive digital publishing systems of the early 80s. Firstly, to remove the acute accent on the E, and secondly, to remove the circumflex accent over the A, which he had forgotten about. Sometime after this, he was to oversee rebrandings of a more corporate kind. In the late 90s, the company had commissioned a new logo, the result being an inventive letter mark that detached the right part of the K, repurposing it as a less than, and combining it with the 3 such that the assemblage resembled a sideways heart, like the ones that were popularly found in SMS messages of the time. The verticals of the K and the P were emphasized, and the round bulge of the P popped out into a distinct bubble. The overall effect seemed to us like that of a heart being crushed between two walls, while a floating bubble helplessly watched on as a hapless postfix. C Seeing us approach, Kendrith's honking stops as he steps out the car. "Ah, missed the match, Mr. Wok," he jaunts, referring to some long-forgotten incident at a publisher's gala dinner, the details of which long flattened under the weight of its own inflated mythology. He shoves a stack of manuscripts our way while simultaneously sliding a platter of crudités and canapés off the passenger seat of his Mazda MX-80. The platter is on a tray of thick golden cardboard, about the size of a dustbin lid, and when its belt is undone and it's removed from the seat, we can clearly see the leatherette has been roughly lacerated through to the padding beneath, the sun-yellowed foam exuding in chunks from the shiny black material. "Don't worry about that," he says, noticing the torn upholstery catching our gaze. "Little spat with old prickly pants. Listen, this won't take long. Just want a second pair on the new compendium." Jittering arms gesturing to a pile of papers. Since the aforementioned unknown Wok incident, we have been somehow magnetically indentured to the pre-publishing workflows of new editions of the compendium, sporadically summoned as sub-editors in this way back and forth over the years, despite the near three-decade impasse since the demise of K3P. So, after a laboured backtracking of the path inside the complex to the dry poolside, we pull up a couple of spare loungers and convene to start the review process. Kendrith thumbs past the foreword and editor's introduction to a plate containing 12 pencil drawings. The first is instantly recognisable, clearly depicting our first day on the job, standing outside the staff entrance, holding the door open, while a stream of employees is chased outside by some mysterious internal peril. The intensity of their panicked expressions matched by the perplexity of our own. Aside from this first one, most of the other frames seem to depict us at some stage during a weekend or holiday period. Here we are supping from bowls of pumpkin soup in a dining hut somewhere in the Italian Alps. Here we are bowling with some old school friends, tongue jutting from the side of our mouth in concentration as we step forward to launch the ball. Here we are cutting out gingerbread men with a cookie cutter alone in a large empty kitchen. And here we are falling out of a plane. It's unclear whether we're wearing a parachute pack or just a rucksack. In all the other situations, it's certainly feasible they could have had someone out there observing us and making these drawings. But with this parachuting one, that would have been tricky. And, like the other scenarios, this did actually happen, although it was a tandem dive. We were strapped to the front of a man called Warren, and we'd lied about the tandem nature of the jump, saying we needed to take 3 weeks off for the training. And this had been arranged as paid leave since it was a charity jump. We were diving for KnitNets Now, a social enterprise set up to repair the local zoo's aviary netting, which had been torched by a wayward meteor. A fairly large area over the tropical bird section had been completely destroyed, causing flocks of toucans, macaws and hornbills to literally flee in fear through the burning material. "Is there anything wrong with any of these pictures?" says Kendrith, tapping at the page. "All of them seem to be pretty accurate apart from the skydiving picture, but we're not coming clean about that anytime soon." As Pate Napate's narrowing eyes meet ours, the sudden sound of a marching band flares up, and hundreds of former employees spill into the pool area, each one with a child strapped to the front in a kind of baby harness. I knew some of these employees had children, but not all of them. And they're all waving their arms in the air and doing a sort of shuffle dance, as if they're miming falling through the air as they circle round the pool. There's a coordinated chorus of baby sounds coming from the adults as they jerk around the poolside. "Where did you get all these children from?" "Shut up," snaps Pate, I'm not arguing about babies to a big pair of babies too scared to fall out of a plane without being strapped to a man. The truth is, we were terrified, even though we were strapped to a man. Not so much about the fall, but more about the landing. A fear that turned out, as it happened, to be justified, as a freak thermal drifted us towards the zoo, and we'd been unable to avoid the aviary, tearing off a sizable piece of recently repaired netting as we plunged into it, the parachute entangling and smothering an entire colony of cormorants. While we were somehow hooked by the front of our harness to the branch of an elm tree, Warren had come loose and had fallen into a lake of terrified geese who had pecked him ruddy before he bolted, leaving us dangling there with some explaining to do. We'd always thought that because of Dad's contacts in zoo management, the news hadn't reached the outside world, at least not beyond a few obscure zookeeping periodicals. But that seems doubtful now, as the former employees complete their circling of the dry pool and turn to face us, baby whales modulating into a cacophony of goose quacking. The meaning is clear. We must dive into the empty pool and swim laps across the tiles until our skin is raw and ruddy. We look around for some sign of help from our friend, but they've been sleeping this whole time, noise-cancelling headphones and light-cancelling eyewear cancelling out any sensory involvement in any of the events at hand. So we drop the circus trousers, strip down to our speedos, and get on with it.